Days of violent protests against rising costs have brought parts of Ecuador to a standstill. The government is now negotiating with indigenous groups leading the demonstrations. But can dialogue curb their anger? And will it help solve the country's economic crisis? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Sahil Rahman. Ecuador's government is holding negotiations with representatives of its indigenous community. The talks aim to end weeks of protest over a sharp increase in fuel and food prices that have affected indigenous people the most. After previously accusing strikers of laying the groundwork for a coup, President Guillermo Lasso has lifted a state of emergency and made some concessions. But demonstrators say Lasso's concessions are not enough. We begin our discussion in a moment, but first, our Latin America editor, Lucia Newman, has this report.
Negotiations to end Ecuador's crippling nationwide strike have been excruciatingly slow and complex, but at least they've begun. Outside of Quito's Basilica, Amazonian guards kept everyone at a safe distance. While supporters of the indigenous-led strike, which is now in its third week, danced for good luck. President Guillermo Lasso's representative warned that the government would not cave in to all of the strikers' demands, especially a 40-cent cut in petrol and diesel prices.
Those who agree to everything asked of them aren't doing the right thing. Rather, they're receiving orders. That is the characteristic of a kidnapped government, and we will not be one of those.
But indigenous leaders stood firm.
Our objective is for the wealth of this country, which we too produce, to be redistributed fairly and equally.
In the absence of a breakthrough, roadblocks that have crippled much of the economy, including Ecuador's key oil industry, were reinforced.
This is the town of Hualo, a poor agricultural community outside of the capital, Quito, where we arrived a short while ago to find this huge roadblock leading to one of the main highways in this country, as well as tires burning and tempers flaring. The residents tell us that just a short while ago, they had a violent encounter with security forces.
We saw an ambulance race off with one of the injured. An elderly man who was reportedly attacked by riot police inside his home. Gestures say they were fired upon at close range with tear gas and rubber pellets.
They came here to kill us. They have no compassion for women and children or the elderly.
While scores of security forces have also been seriously injured in running battles with protesters, the six fatal victims so far have been demonstrators. 60-year-old Beatriz Ramirez insists their strike is just.
We work the land with our picks and shovels to survive. We aren't rich, so we need the government to lower the price of fuel.
The government has agreed to alleviate farmers' bank debts and improve health and education services. And it's offered to decrease fuel by 10 cents a gallon. But indigenous leaders say that's not nearly enough. And so the government continues to weigh carefully its commitment to IMF austerity measures against a governability crisis that is worsening by the day. Lucia Newman, Al Jazeera, Quito.
So let's bring in our guests on this edition of Inside Story. In Guayaquil, Ecuador, Adrian Perez Salazar, an attorney and political analyst. In Cuenca, also in Ecuador, Manuela Peake, a professor at the Universidad San Francisco de Quito and Amherst College. And in New York, in the US, is Danny Shaw, a professor of Latin American and Caribbean Studies at the City University of New York. Welcome to you all on this edition of Inside Story. Manuela, can I just begin with you? Can you just sum up for us and for our viewers across the world in 30 seconds, where are we right now in Ecuador and what's going on?
So we're going through a national protest led by the indigenous movement. We're 2 weeks in now, entering day 615. The roots are many, of course, but we can say that the short run, the last 2 years, we are coming out of a major crisis because of COVID. There has been no governmental support. The hospital system is totally dismantled. There's no medicine in the hospitals. The education system is dismantled. There are many problems to get into university, and there are thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of students who cannot enter. So high unemployment on top of that. We only have 30% of Ecuadorians who actually have a formal job.
And how much?
And on top
how much,
of all of
Manuela,
that,
can I just pop
we
in
have
there?
A contest.
If I just jump in there, how, to sum up, how frustrated is society right now?
So all of that leads to a lot of frustration, and there is no government response. So the indigenous movement called for a strike, a national strike, 2 weeks ago. And the government, the first day of the strike, has detained, illegally kidnapped the president of the indigenous movement. So that led to a lot of resentment and even more mobilization.
Okay.
Right. And then after 2 weeks of protest, the president of a list of 10 demands, instead of like sitting to negotiate, really has sent the military onto people. There are many dead and people in hospitals. So there is an anger that is growing and blossoming among society.
And we'll unravel all of that in the next half hour. Let me bring in Adrian Perez Salazar. I mean, how much of this is about the sort of historical anger within the country of successive government as a successive government not being able to draw on the aspirations of what the public want? And how much of it is about the immediate short-term COVID? We're now seeing a war in Ukraine, which is impacting globally. There's short-term and long-term issues here. Where do you, Adrian, see the problem being embedded?
Thanks for having me. I believe this is mostly short-term issues that are happening here. Mr. Issa, the leader of the indigenous movement, tried to do a strike a few months ago, and it was completely unsuccessful. And that was because a lot of the issues that were happening, that are happening now, were not as prominent then. So there is always been a lot of issues of economic disparity in Ecuador, of economic inequality, lack of access to education, and so forth. But what is sparking this particular protest right now is very, very concrete political and economic circumstances. There's a growing discontent on rising food prices.
Yeah.
There's been also a wave of high crime, which has not been properly controlled by the government. So all of these issues have caused that the government, which was very popular a few months ago, now has a 70% disapproval rate.
Mm-hmm.
However, and here's where I'm going to disagree with Ms. Manuela, is that the amount of violence that these protests have sparked are completely disproportionate with what the public sentiment is. And I'm not, this is not speculation. There has been a poll that has been conducted a couple of days ago. 80% of Ecuadorian people are disagreeing with the strike. 61% of Ecuadorians don't believe that the demands are legitimate, and 76% of them disapprove of the tactics used by the protesters.
Okay.
We're talking about tactics that have gone as far as poisoning a city water supply. The city of Ambato, they use motor oil and 25% of their potable water now it's poisoned.
Okay.
They've attacked military convoys. So the explanation, at least in my eyes, is that yes, there's been a growing discomfort and resentment against the government, but this has been channeled for political gain.
Okay.
And what's the political gain? It's they're trying to overthrow the president.
Okay,
and
well,
let
me bring in Danny Shaw here, because it's easy perhaps to see a view a little bit further away, Danny, in terms of whether, you know, as Adrian has just mentioned, you know, there is this perhaps feeling that the government needs to go, the president needs to go, and those are the aims of some members of the Senate at the moment, politically. Have they just jumped onto an opportunity to see the frustration of the indigenous communities, or is it a little bit more complicated than that?
This is a class showdown. This is an anti-imperialist showdown. The most vulnerable sectors of the Ecuadorian population are sick and tired of being sick and tired. They're sick of a neoliberal government led by Guillermo Lasso, formerly by Lenin Moreno, that represents an interruption to the citizens' revolution, a movement led by Rafael Correa that was in power before Lenin Moreno, which paid a great amount of attention to the most vulnerable sectors of the population, the Afro-Ecuadorians, the indigenous population, the working populations. And now we see this neoliberal cabinet, which prefers to serve a foreign debt, a debt to the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, instead of servicing the everyday people. So these alarmingly high gas prices, inflation, violence within the prisons, a hike in crime, it's clear that the neoliberal paradigm has failed. And that's why we have hundreds of thousands of Ecuadorians in the streets up against the greatest amounts of repression and the militarization of the country's police force.
OK, well, Adrian's disagreeing with you, but I want to just quickly go back to Manuela, because part of the issues, and we'll deal with them one at a time, one of them is about fuel. Ecuador itself is an oil-producing country. Some 8.27 million barrels of crude were produced, and therefore there is the revenue for the government to improve life for Ecuadorians. One of the demands of the indigenous communities is to stop drilling and to stop producing oil on indigenous land. If you don't have the revenue, how do you improve people's lives? Because you need money for it, don't you, Manuela?
It's been 50 years that Ecuador exports oil and there has been no benefit for communities. But the demand is not to stop oil. It's to stop the expansion of the oil frontier, and in particular to stop the expansion of the mining frontier on water sources in the mountains. The problem of drilling in Ecuador or mining in Ecuador is that there's never community consultation, prior and informed consent from the communities, which is in the law in Ecuador, it's in international law, and the government gives concession illegally without having the consent of the communities. So that's a major problem. And Ecuador is a dollarized economy. And Ecuadorians are migrating to the U.S. The remittances have increased 30% last year to try to get money for their families. Meanwhile, the president of Ecuador, who's a banker, is involved in the Pandora Papers, right? And has been evading money to fiscal paradises in the U.S., to the Dakotas, to Florida, and taking the money away from the countries that people are migrating, taking risks, dying on the way, migrating illegally to send money back in, dollars back in, because we do not produce our own money. So there is an inequality of the poor trying to make money and the rich taking the money away from the country.
Adrian,
it's not about mining.
I think some people might say it is about mining slightly, because Danny, wouldn't you agree that neighbouring countries like Peru are having the same problem as many other countries across the world, are rising gas prices, there are protests about inflation, you know, food is, or certainly the grain that the world produces in Europe isn't getting to the right markets as such. Is it about oil? Is it about food and fuel? Are you not experiencing, as a country, the same things that other countries are facing right now? What makes Ecuador so different?
Ecuador has a long history of mobilization against inequality. From 1999 to 2005, we saw the Ecuadorian people topple three presidents. We see massive changes in the region. We see the first leftist president in neighboring Colombia. We see new dialogues with the Venezuelan government about getting their oil onto the international market, particularly from France and Emmanuel Macron. We've seen strong anti-imperialist movements in power now in Bolivia, in Nicaragua. We saw the Summit of the Americas failure in Los Angeles a few weeks ago. And it's clear that the Ecuadorian people are clamoring for more unity, more integration, more subsidies, more social benefits. And the government of Guillermo Lasso in this bancocracia, or this bankocracy, as they say in Ecuador, is moving further and further towards austerity programs and structural adjustment programs, which is against the will of the masses of people in the streets of Ecuador.
Adrian, can I bring you in here about the sort of the inequalities between those that live in the country and those that live in urban areas in the city. Is there not also a racial divide? There's the indigenous communities in the country who are seen as those that have to provide for those in the urban areas. And there have been uprisings before, haven't they, in the 1990s and, 1994 as well, that's highlighted the inequalities that indigenous communities feel.
There are very prominent structural issues in Ecuador of inequality and a lack of access to opportunities. That's not being debated here. That's a problem that's very real. The issue is that to try to explain what's happening right now only by appealing to those factors is akin to trying to explain a plane crash by appealing to gravity. You know, these issues have been here all along. Now, the question is, what's happening right now? What is the intention of these particular actors at this moment? What are they trying to do? And what I believe, and I strongly disagree with some of the things that are being said, that there has not been a huge hike in fuel prices. That quite the opposite. You know, I'm going to put some context here, some actual numbers. In Ecuador, we only have three brands of fuel. It's called Ecopaís, Extra, and Super. The first that I mentioned have lower octanage, and the third one is a high octanage. It's a better quality for, you know, better higher quality vehicles. And the first two, the price has been completely frozen. There has been no increase in fuel prices in these two. And it's only in the third one, which is only consumed by the urban elites, that there's been an increase in prices. So it's completely ludicrous. It's completely absurd to believe that this is caused by, as it's been said right now, that by higher fuel prices.
Well, you have the fuel price as one issue, but then that in itself has an impact on food prices when you're trying to move food around the country or bring it in. Manuela, you're sort of shaking your head. Just come in and on that chat.
Yeah, I just want to clarify maybe for the audience. Ecuador is a country where indigenous slavery was legal until 1964. 1964, indigenous peoples were legally freed from slavery. They were sold with the land until then. So, of course, there's structural problems from before. But when you have a neoliberal president, right, who's governing for the 1%, who has all his millions of dollars, billions, involved in the Pandora Papers, and who's not listening to the population, who has problems with the increase of price, not accessing university, not accessing health. And there's a 10-point list. So it's not just fuel. It's not just food. It is a global problem since the war in Ukraine. But there are eight other points beyond fuel and food that have to be taken into account. And the rights of nature and the right to clean water are other points that we need to talk about. Ecuador is a milestone globally for establishing the rights of nature constitutionally, legally, and many other countries have followed. Since 2008, we've been expanding the rights of nature. And here we have a government who promises to develop the nation by doubling oil drilling in the Amazon. That is not the solution. We are all trying to protect the Amazon, to protect the future of the planet. And he wants to double oil drilling in the Amazon without indigenous consent.
Okay, so Adrian, where does this then lead, or what options does the president have right now? Because obviously there's a great deal of anger on the streets.
Okay, I just want to very quickly respond to a point made by Manuela. Yeah, okay, if environment is such a big concern, then it makes no sense to increase fuel subsidies. Fuel subsidies are, by definition, bad for the environment. They increase the consumption of fuel and they increase global warming. And the issue with the fuel subsidies is that they are disproportionately favor the top 15% of Ecuadorians, which are the wealthy urban elites. It makes no sense if you try to solve these economic disparities, if you're trying to solve environmental problems, there's no sense in insisting in higher fuel subsidies. The only reason why fuel subsidies have become this railing flag is because they know that they're incredibly hard to sustain. And I'm going to give you some hard numbers right now. With the new increase, with the increase on international fuel prices right now, the Ecuadorian government needs to spend over $3 billion in subsidies, which is equivalent, it's almost equivalent to what they have to spend for the healthcare system, which is $3.16 billion. It's almost what they need to spend for to keep the security or armed forces and police, which is $3.3 billion. So it's a completely unreasonable demand. If Mr. Issa and the indigenous leaders were that concerned about the welfare of their communities, what they would ask is an end of fuel subsidies, which benefit the urban elites, and they will redirect that money to other issues such as education, such as security, such as, for example, subsidies for agricultural products, for agricultural inputs.
Okay.
So it's very clear what's happening here.
Okay.
I've got to
jump in because I want to get Danny in here, because obviously, Danny, you know, we can talk about oil, we can talk about the economy, but we need to talk about the role literally of the indigenous community from your perspective, because they have, since 1964, been able to assert themselves in a way that very few communities and minority groups in other countries around the world have been able to, as a collective group, negotiate, make the government sit and talk to them. That has taken time. Where do you think the negotiations are right now in terms of the way they're talking to each other?
Leonidas Issa and the CONAI said last night they'll be back in the streets today. They've continued to call for peaceful civil disobedience across the country. Overwhelmingly, the repression has come from the government side. We've seen 5 protesters killed so far. We've seen how many hundreds and hundreds of protesters openly wounded, injured, imprisoned. So there's an informational war right now going on in Ecuador and throughout the world, really. They're trying to pin all the violence on the protest movement. They're trying to give carte blanche to the state security forces to continue to carry out this repression. And I think we have to keep coming back to the wider geopolitical significance of Ecuador. The Citizens Revolution said that the U.S. military would no longer have bases in Manta, in Ecuador. Now with Guillermo Lasso, there's talk of a Galapagos Island U.S. military base. So there's a lot at stake here beyond just the bread and butter issues we've been discussing.
Do you think the recent meeting of the Americas in L.A. was formative, or certainly positive, in terms of moving Ecuador's aims forward in what the president wants for the country?
Well, Guillermo Lasso is very isolated in Los Angeles. Most of the Americas and dozens of nations from the Caribbean boycotted this quote-unquote summit of exclusion, or the summit of the Americas, as they tried to call it. And I think this was a great failure. So Guillermo Lasso is more and more isolated. There's very few right-wing U.S.-leaning presidents left in the region. And even Guillermo Lasso has opened up to the Chinese, because he understands as well that the future is increasingly multipolar and not a unipolar world dominated by the U.S.
OK, I'm going to give the last word to Manuela as we come to the end of our programme. Manuela, never enough time in the day, really, for this sort of a programme. The debate is so long and expansive. But in terms of where you see the next few days going, how do you see any sort of negotiation happening between indigenous communities and the government? Or are we set for weeks or months of civil unrest?
It's very tricky to see the end of it. It's the longest indigenous surprise that I have witnessed in 25 years in Ecuador. The president has accepted to dialogue with the indigenous movement, but he did not show up. He sent his ministers, and we're seeing very little progress in the official dialogue that started last night. There is increasingly protest. There were more protests yesterday than any other day in the rest of the country. It's a very diffused protest and increasingly uncontrollable. So I foresee this could last, even though people are getting tired and people need to work and the price of food has skyrocketed because of the protests. I foresee many more confrontations before we see a solution.
Well, there, unfortunately, we have to leave the conversation that we're having. I'd like to thank all of my guests, Adrian Salazar, Manuela Peak, and Danny Shaw for joining us on this edition of Inside Story. Thank you very much. And thank you for watching as well. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/ AJ Inside Story. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is at AJ Inside Story. From me, Sahil Rahman, and the Inside Story team here in Doha, thanks very much for your time and your company.